Hi, welcome to Love Saranghae with Peter and Andrea. In the next 30 minutes, we'll take you on a journey into the exciting world of entrepreneurship, relationships, and the secrets behind achieving that coveted glow. Are you ready? Let's go.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Love Saranghae with your host,
Peter Lee.
And Andrea Morad. Welcome. Today, we're going to be talking about skincare. So every day, we get emails from our customers asking questions, all things skincare, from SPF to skin concern. And once a month, we are going to compile two or three of those questions, most commonly asked questions, and we're going to answer them for you. So a first question, are you ready, Peter?
I am.
All right. Our first question came from a lady by the name of Heather B. Heather did not share her skin type or her skin concern, but her skin age is mature plus. And we assume mature plus to be 65 years old or older. And her question is, hi Saranghae, do any of your products contain GHK copper peptides? How much concentration do you offer? I see concentrations of 3% to 7%, but I don't know what that means. I'm doing some research on peptides before I purchase any products. Thank you, Heather.
Okay, great. That's a really great question because peptides are really, really popular right now. It's like the new thing in skincare. So to answer your question, yes, both our Aurora Bioactive Collagen Serum and Cream contain GHK copper peptide. More specifically, they contain copper tripeptide 1. GHK copper peptide is a trade name for copper tripeptide 1. They're actually one and the same. Now, we also offer the following peptides in our Aurora formulations. The SH polypeptide 121, which is our featured peptide, acetylhexapeptide 8, copper tripeptide 1, and palmitol pentapeptide 4. Okay.
That is a mouthful.
It is, definitely.
Oh my gosh.
Let me explain what these are. So peptides, we get this all the time. Peptides are branches or chains of amino acids, which are considered to be building blocks of protein. They also can be described as short proteins that are about 2 to 100 amino acid chains long. Copper tripeptide 1, as an example, is made up of amino acids glycine, histidine, and lysine, along with the mineral copper. The reason peptides are so exciting for skincare is because they are the foundation behind everything from building muscle, tendons, and new collagen for skin. It is being touted as the true fountain of youth. Now, the science is still evolving here, but it is really, really exciting because before we formulated Aurora, we did a whole lot of research on peptides before we chose SH polypeptide 121. And I personally believe that the combination of naturally occurring peptides and engineered peptides, the combo of those two will be the key to longevity, disease management, and the future of skincare.
Wow.
Now, before we talk about effective concentrations of peptides for skincare, I want to explain the nuance of skincare labeling or concentration labeling. It's important here. So products imported from Korea must follow a very specific labeling requirement to be imported into the US. So we have to show the actual concentration of the raw ingredient, whereas products that are made in the US, until just recently, are not required to show the concentration of raw ingredient. Only
why
the concentratum.
Is that?
Because the FDA rules are not specific into exactly what needs to go into the label. They have guidelines. So what happens is people put in concentrations of ingredients that are purchased from the supplier or the ingredient extract. For example, copper tripeptide is the raw ingredient, right? Mm-hmm. It contains about 0.05%, which is the lower end of the effective range. GHK, copper peptide, is a trade name, meaning copper tripeptide 1 is one ingredient plus some preservatives like butylene glycol or glycerin or water. They sell this as an ingredient to the ingredient package to the manufacturer. And so all you have to do is say 7% GHK copper peptide, because it's not a lie. It is 3 to 7% GHK copper peptide, but the active ingredient, pure copper tripeptide, is probably only 0.001 to 0.1%.
So does that mean it's less effective?
No, that doesn't actually mean it's less effective, because the effective range of any ingredient, including peptides, will level off at a certain range. Through our clinical tests and the studies that we have shown, the effective clinical concentration is somewhere between 0.01 to 0.05 to 0.1 in the high range. Anything above that, you're paying more for the peptide. It doesn't really do much for the skin. What's important to note, though, is that when you have a trade name and it's 5%, that trade name only contains a lesser percentage of that active ingredient. So GHK copper peptide is a trade name, 5%, but the actual ingredient is copper tripeptide 1 at 0.05%. Okay, that's why the discrepancy in percentage. By the summer of 2025, all skincare brands are required to list raw ingredient concentrations because of something called MOCRA that's coming up by the FDA. So we and our partners in Korea are already doing this because imported skincare products go through far more scrutiny than domestic products. So FDA Customs can deny imports of products if we are not accurate with our labeling, whereas U.S. manufactured products don't have this issue and can get away with a lot more.
So in other words, Korean skincare products imported from Korea are
the best. Well, we believe so. But I want to end this question with this. In the end, though, I think you will agree. I think it's really about personal preference. If you enjoy a serum or cream with 5% GHK copper peptide, that's on you. It's a reasonably priced and it's good. That's probably all that matters. If it irritates your skin or you don't like the experience, then concentration of a peptide is secondary concern.
So is that what you're looking for to know if it's good or not? Is how it responds to your skin or how your skin...
Yeah, so you're always going to make the decision based upon the ingredients you're looking for, especially here in North America. So if you want copper tripeptide 1, you take a look at what percentage ingredient is effective for you or what you think is a reasonable concentration for the price you're paying. And then at the end of the day, you're going to try them out. And if it doesn't work for you, it doesn't matter how much percentage peptide it has,
right?
Maybe the other ingredients like niacinamide, maybe retinol, maybe vitamin C, alpha arbutin. Yeah, maybe they're more tranexamic acid. Maybe they're more important to your skin than peptides, or maybe it's a combination of both. So
in summary, what you're saying in the end is it really depends on your individual skin, and you need to do a little bit of trial and error to see what actually is going to be safe and effective for you.
Exactly. So don't get too lost on the percentage of especially ingredient extracts, because it doesn't necessarily mean that the raw ingredient is compared to the raw ingredient, and do some research on exactly what that means.
Okay. Is there a peptide that's better than another?
You can't say that. To be honest, I think it's a combination of, so we have four, actually we have 12 amino acids and four types of different peptides. One of them is a vegan collagen peptide that's been grown from sugar molecules. The others have which is SH polypeptide 121. The others are more broadly sourced peptides that other skincare providers have. My experience with peptides is that the combination is always better than in a single one.
In isolation.
Exactly. We have the highest concentration of SH polypeptide 121 because that is we have the most clinical data on that peptide, and that's the one that we figure to be the most powerful, most effective, and the most desirable. It's actually the most expensive, too.
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Okay, we're going to go on to question number two. If anyone has any other questions about SH polypeptide 121 or any of the other peptides that we spoke about, definitely send us a DM on Instagram or send us an email. And we'll leave that in the show notes, how you can reach us. Okay, skincare question number two. This customer's name is Ingrid W. And she has sensitive and dry skin. Her skin concerns, she has redness, fine lines, and wrinkles. And she's concerned with the overall skin tone. Her skin is also mature, so 65 plus. Here's a question from Ingrid. Hi, Sarangay. When I wear sunscreen and stay out in the sun for a long time, I notice that my face gets really, really hot. It feels like I'm radiating, or as if I'm a radiator that's giving off heat. It happens for both chemical sunscreens and mineral sunscreen. I'm worried that my face is getting burned even though I'm constantly reapplying sunscreen. Is this normal? Can you help me understand what's going on? Thanks, Ingrid. How would you answer that, Peter?
Again, that's another great question. So first and foremost, you have nothing to worry about. Okay, so what's happening to you, Ingrid, is normal, and it's simply how sunscreens work. So all sunscreens, chemical, for example, avobenzone, or physical, example, zinc oxide, work by absorbing the UV light it rays and converting them into heat. So that's the mechanism. This is the mechanism by which sunscreens filter out UV from the full spectrum, from the full light spectrum. So physical sunscreens like ours, Haranghae, Let's Get Physical, Sheer UV Defense, SPF sunscreen, also tend to scatter about 5 to 7% of incoming ultraviolet light. So the main mechanism is absorption, but the physical ones also reflect a little bit away from the skin, which is a good thing. So in terms of pure efficacy of protection from UV light, both chemical and physical are pretty effective. Maybe, you know, a slightly tiny bit of a higher screening for physical sunscreens, but not by an appreciable amount. However, we here at Saranghae tend to advocate for physical sunscreens for two main reasons. One is that chemical sunscreens are absorbed into the skin, while physical sunscreens stay on top of the skin.
Okay, which is what you want.
Which is what you want.
To absorb into the skin. Chemicals that you don't want into your bloodstream.
Absolutely, yeah. Generally, only physical sunscreens are coral reef and marine safe.
Say that again.
So only physical sunscreens like titanium dioxide or zinc oxide are coral reef and marine life safe.
So that means that when you are in Hawaii and you're swimming in the ocean, it is safe for all the life in the water. So that means that you are not harming them by wearing a sunscreen.
Yeah. So, you know, my advice always is if you have a choice, wear a physical sunscreen.
Yeah.
If you have a choice, choose a pure zinc oxide versus a zinc oxide titanium dioxide hybrid. Zinc oxide is the most expensive mineral and it works for all UVA, UVB. Titanium dioxide is cheaper, but you can't do full titanium dioxide because it only has UVA, UVB protection.
Yeah.
So you put a little bit of zinc oxide to make it a little cheaper to produce, but still say you have UVA, UVB protection. Zinc oxide is the full UVA, UVB protection, but it's also the most expensive.
Right.
So choose zinc oxide where you can, choose physical where you can. However, wearing any sunscreen is better than wearing none. So if your choice is chemical, go ahead and use a chemical sunscreen. It's better than not wearing any at all.
Or alternatively, you can protect yourself from the sun in other ways, wearing long sleeves,
absolutely,
light colors, wearing a hat, sitting under a shady tree. Those things are actually the best way to protect yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But if you don't have that option, then definitely wear something.
My last point is always remember that your sun can burn even on cloudy days because UV light still penetrates through the clouds.
This is such a misconception. People think it's cloudy outside, it's winter outside, so I don't need to wear sunscreen.
No, that's not correct. And your skin will burn faster if you're surrounded by reflective surfaces like snow or ice. So be careful when you're out snowboarding or skiing or climbing a mountain. You know, it might be cold. Yeah, it might be cold, but even that little bit of sunlight will reflect off the snow and ice and it will accelerate the skin burn. So be careful of that.
100%. I have a question for you. Do you recommend SPF 30, 50, what's the minimum SPF that you would recommend for face and body?
Yeah, so that's a really good question again. So it all depends. So the higher the SPF, the greater the residue on your skin, right? So the lower the SPF, the more sheer it becomes. And that's probably the reason why our sunscreen is becoming so popular is because it's the sheerest SPF 50 you can get. Most SPF 50s in the past look like a pasty white cream. But ours tends to absorb very well.
And on your face too, they stay that color.
Most brands will recommend at least an SPF 30, because that's where the performance of UV filtering tends to kind of like level off. You get a lot more gain. You still get more gains, but it's not as steep of a gain as let's say SPF 5 to SPF 30.
Mm.
But to me, if you can get away with it and you don't mind it, having, you know, the highest SPF is probably the best. We tend to propose or recommend the SPF 50 because it is a very sheer formula and it filters out like 99.99% of all UV light. It's a very good product, but at least I would say at least SPF 30 recommend SPF 50.
Right. And speaking to our sunscreen, the Let's Get Physical Sheer UV Defense, someone asked why it becomes liquidy.
Mm.
Can you speak to that?
Yes. So the zinc oxide is a mineral, and the mineral sits on top of the skin. That means that it does not absorb into any kind of liquid. So what happens is, over time, if it sits on the shelf, especially after it's been opened, the mineral will separate out from the liquid and settle to the bottom. So so what you need to do is very shake well, shake the SPF really, really well before use. Now, there is a point when the sunscreen becomes expired, or it'll become really, really liquidy. It'll probably smell different. It may even have a different color. At that point, that sunscreen it's expired. It may still even give you SPF protection, right? But you just don't want to take the chance.
No.
For $20, $40. So throw it
not
out.
Not with it. Not
yeah,
with
throw it.
It
out.
That
but
point, throw it out.
General rule
so
of thumb.
So we're looking for smell. Mm-hmm. We're looking for color change. And we're looking for, if it's very, very liquidy and it's not thickening up even after vigorous shaking, those three things together are the signs that it's time to get something.
Yeah. So one last point, there is a difference in expiry date between products that have not been opened and products that have been opened. And
that's
all know this.
Point.
Yeah. We all know this as a skincare aficionados. Anytime you get oxygen or any kind of atmosphere into the formula, it's going to degrade the formula faster.
So in other words, when it's open, oxygen can
exactly
enter the product. Yeah.
So general rule of thumb is unopened products, SPF, will last anywhere from 2 to 3 years. Open products will probably last you less than a year. So once you open it, you gotta use it that season. You should use it that season.
But if you're using it consistently, you finish it well before the
expiry. Oh, absolutely. Time. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the message here.
That's the message.
Be consistent with your sunscreen and all of the other skincare products.
Absolutely.
And then they won't expire.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's it for us today. That's all the questions that we have for today. I hope it was helpful. If you have more questions around SPF or around polypeptide, please write in to us. You can either send us a DM at Aurora Skin on Instagram or at Love Sarangay Skin. And you can also reach out to us on our customer care at our website at www.lovesarangay.com. Thank you for listening. As always, we are your hosts, Peter and Andrea, and this is Love Sarangay.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Love Sarangay with us, Peter and Andrea. If you've enjoyed this episode, leave us a review. Your ratings and reviews help more people like you find our show. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and share this podcast with someone you think would love it. Until next time, love yourself, love one another, and love the world.